accession number 11377, reel 15.
Mr. W. Bateman, reel 15. You said that one of your jobs, Mr. Bateman, was to run out lines when they got broken.
Yes.
Caused by heavy fire, no doubt. That must have been quite a dangerous job at times.
Well, actually, when we'd read to the forward positions it was, we had to more like crawl on our bellies and run the lines through our hands, because it was nearly always at night time when we had to repair the lines. And it wasn't very often that they were told. It just depends when, if Jerry did some mortar shelling or anything like that. But it wasn't very often they were broken. But we did have to go out to maintain them, to see that they were still in working order. Like,
when you went out, did you have anyone covering for you?
No cover at all. Just used to inform the officer, the... But first of all, the signal officer would tell us that there was go out and such, say A Company line. It was had broken. One of the lines had broken at A Company. So you nearly had two lines to each company. And one of the, such as A, maybe we called it A line. So we'll find out which start off from the exchange, which we had at the battalion HQ. And we'd follow that line as far as we could in daylight. That was from the battalion headquarters up to nearly up to the company headquarters position. And then we'd lie low. Well, maybe for about a half an hour or an hour, till everybody, see, the battalion, all the whole battalion, at dusk, they stood too. An hour before dusk and an hour after dusk. So that was when we would start our work. But we had to stand too before we went. And then after stand down was, we all, being an end signal NCO, we had watches, see, and we knew what time stand two was, and what time stand two was down, stand down was on. So and there I get my line party. There was just me and another chap would go out, because it wasn't a policy to have too many going out on the move. Because sometimes, I'm certain she would, Jerry, sometimes had these night glasses, and if you stood up, you could be seen in the skyline, you see, although it was dark, but you still could see outline of people walking. So we more really walked, crawled, like not crawled, but bent down. And when we come to where there was like had to go up a hill, but stand up and walk, like. But we had to keep on slow all the time, because we were running the line through our hands. And the lad behind would make sure that it was, and if we lifted it up such as in a roadway, would stop there and would rebury it again, see? And then every now and then would tap in on the line. We had a telephone with us, and we used to just put a couple of clips. They used to screw them so, and they used to penetrate the insulation, and we could go back to the, and then report, and then we said we're moving on again, and then when we found the break, we'd repair it, but we'd first of all put the telephone on the end, and ring back to the HQ and tell them we'd found the break, then we'd see if there's any more breaks. And would put the telephone on the company side and try to ring them. If we didn't get them, we'd mend the brake and carry on.
Because you were between battalion headquarters and the company.
And the company HQ.
So your main danger would be artillery or snipers or whatever?
Artillery or snipers. And then we'd walk on till we found the other next brake. And then we'd do the same. Phone back to HQ till we found the another break, then put the telephone on the other end of the line. Because we were all the time we were just finland, and many time we'd No, say we put the telephone on, we'd have to go so far and find the, such as if it's a mortar shell, it would lift it away. So what we had to do, do our best to walk round, feeling, find the end of the line. Because it was a twilight zone, and you could still see a little bit. And then we'd find it, and then we'd put it on the, put the telephone on, and this time we'll get through to company HQ. So right on, we'll tell them we're the linemen, men of the line. So
did you carry weapons with you? Did you have any weapons?
Yes, we had a, I carried a revolver, and the other lineman carried his rifle. The NCOs in the second platoon carried revolvers, the 38 caliber rifle, revolver like. And then we'd mend the line. Then we'd start, work out but way back, and bury, cover it in the best we could till next day. And then in daylight, then we'd start, we'd work out again, and then we'd bury it, cover it in.
It was never so deep, though, that you couldn't pull it up.
Oh, no, it was only about 3 or 4 inches of the ground. They said that, a direct hit would break the line. But if it dropped about, say, a yard away, it wouldn't. It would just go up, say, the shell, the small shell or the mortar shell would go. But it had to be a big shell before it would break. It had more like a direct hit on it, that's all.
Were you ever shelled on one of these tasks?
Tell us what, I don't know. Can't remember.
Was it a stressful job? Were you tense and...
No. It's just more like routine. It was the more distressed one was a line went from the one of the company HQ up to the one of the platoons. That was Ben Stenson, because we'd have to go up the company HQ just before stand two and get. And then stand to with them. And then we'd have to start and go out. And then we had to nearly crawl on our hands and knees. And that was tense. Because we could have come under fire. You know, if he put, sometimes you have to use to put flares up and everything. And, but once you got started, we forgot about it. Once you got, it was only the waiting that did it. And so once we got started, we did the same routine, only throw our hands and mend it when we found it, or when we found one end and had to go and look for the other. Sometimes you had to go up to either such as the company HQ or the platoon headquarter before, and then follow the line back to find it. Many times, sometimes we would find maybe about 6 or 7 yards missing with the shell, maybe a direct shell on it, and we always carried drum a cable with us. And sometimes if we went out there and found the line broken, we couldn't find the other line, just the line we had with us, we'd start just running, or go up to the platoon HQ and tell them to connect that piece on the telephone and then work back to our other joint.
You were pretty important men.
Oh, yes.
Obviously.
We were on call all the time.
And the platoon commanders and company commanders would realise just how important you were.
Yes. And the second platoon was well respected, because it was we was in peacetime. It was more like the elite platoon. A lot of people always said the second platoon, neon again.
Did you have, as a platoon, did all the men, were they all good? Did they all pull their weight? Was any of the
everyone pulled their weight? Yes, and there was no argument or anything. If they were told to do a job, they never they would just say right, or get all the equipment. What equipment do we need and everything, and who was going to be in charge? And then such as mutilation, I was doing. I would say right, Bobby Turner. I says you'll come with him, Fatty Hall, and I says you can come with me. And they wouldn't have nothing.
You didn't have any men who were a bit shaky?
Oh, no. We had some good fellas in the desert. But when I come to the European, I'll tell you more about that. But it's quite reasonable. We kept the lines open. There was no complaints from the CO, and he said when we'd finished, when we were relieved, when the 8th Army came up again, that starts coming up from up the desert again. And we went back in reserve, went back behind the lines. Wait a minute, no, we didn't. It was only, I can't remember now what happened. We went back into near Tobruk to get reorganised, because we informed that the 8th Army was on its way up. This was the first attack, you know, before Montgomery took over. I think it was Auchinleck, I think myself. And we went back and we got reorganised, and as luck happened, they give us some radios. We got some radios through. And they said, I don't know who relieved his mind on the main line, because I can't remember. So we went back to this place and we got all briefed, and they said, we're going to break out on the eastern side of Tobruk. We had an object to take, and there was going to be supposed to be, I think myself, the a Scotch regiment had come in. Can't remember now, but I said they were going to go out, they were going to break out of Tobruk on the eastern side of, that's the Saloum side, the Bardia side we have. So we got all and tuned in. We got all the lads together, and we said, "We've got a radio here." And they said, "Well, how do you?" I says, "Well, I'll learn you how to, because I'd been used to, I'd had them on the course in Cairo." So I got them all together, like we spaced each other out, and we got cracking and told them how to tune it in, how to fit there, and what happened? They'd instead of that an internal battery there, that was quite good. It was the 101, I think, the 101 radio, I think they call it that. So we got them all started up, like, and tuned in, and we found out the wavelength we allocated was the Home Service in England on the 49 meter band. So we had to make inquiries that, so they altered the watches, the wavelength, and I think they put it under the 45 metre band, because it was on short wave. It was a short from, now where was it, there was only a short, I think it was about 40, I think it was 40 metres up to the 50 metre line. That's the only way we could that's the only wavelengths we had on that one. So I got them all learnt, and I think we were there 3 days. Then, so we got all tuned in, like. And then we got them out to the sent the lads back out to the company, and then we said we'll have a rehearsal, and everything worked champion. We got in, and I got the call signs. I forget now what call, but I know the CO headquarters was Sunrear. I was with Sunrear, that was the Britannia HQ. So we set off and went through the the Scotch lines. I don't remember seeing them, like, but we were supposed to go. And we were going, and then we halted. And then we went to all formed up, and then we were told that the signal officer said, then we says the battalion is going to take a place called 157. And he says, you called Bateman, he says, you're going to be the CO's district signaller. So I had to go with Colonel Ladern. So we set off, and I think we went in, we got some transport. And we went, I think we spent for about an hour in the transport. And then we disembarked. And then we all formed up. And now then, I think it was C and B company, I can't remember. Now, we had two companies forward and two companies behind. And there was one on the left and one on the right. And we set forward and walking. And Colonel Adern was in the middle. He says, don't, to me, he says, don't you worry, he says. He says, you're not failing one, did you? And there was some flying, like, there were hornets, like hornets, you know. And he says, no, he says, get in touch with the radio. And you know what? Everything went all the way. We heard Italian, some Italian speaking. There was the Home Service had come back on the radio. And could we all get through? It was a flop. So I says, righto, not bother. So he says, righto. So what he did was, he kept going. That's why he said, you was just stop here. He says, you was just go forward, like, because it was his batman and all with him. And he went over, and I was good. I thought he did something, and then he came back again, and he says, everything's all right. So we start advancing forward. And then we started find out who were getting among the Italians. So everything came to a halt. And so he says, we went to a recce, and it was getting on for daylight. Then all of a sudden the companies decided to do the attack. So we all started running, like. And Colonel Adern, he dropped back and let the four companies go forward. And I think it was C Company. One was the company C Company. I'll tell you about that in a minute. And so we went forward, and there was ructions on. There was things flying all over the shop, like. And then all of a sudden things seemed to quiet down. So we all went forward. And that's when I come across Captain Keith. He'd been killed at C Company. And then the Howison got to know that their position had been taken, and our Italian prisoners had been taken. And now we're going to bed down. And now he says, we're told that the Green Howards, I think it was the Green Howards, went through and on past us. And that's where we stopped. We did no more action after that.
This would be the first time that you would be in the front?
Yes, it's the first time I'd been in action.
So how did you feel?
Well, when we were waiting, we were a bit dovery. I was, like, I don't know what they're like. But it was a queer feeling. I said, no, I said, I'm going forward, and I've never been forward before. So I said, well, I'm going to make the best of it. So Colonel Adern gave us a reassurance. I think myself, I don't know whether he'd been in the First World War, I think. He says, don't worry, as he said to me. He says, don't worry. He says, you'll not feel the one that hit you. He says, if the air is on one, he says, you'll get it. And once we started walking forward, everything seemed to fall into place. Your fear had gone. You're just like marching, more like a training, as if you're on training. And like that all the time. I forgot about what was around us and everything. All I concentrate on Colonel Adern. He says, keep with me now.
Stuck with him?
I stuck with him. So when we did, they took the position we'd been taken, and all the other battalions went through us, that, and we settled down. Now returned back to the HQ, the battalion HQ that formed up.
Were you seeing men being shot and killed?
No, I never saw anybody killed, but after we settled down, they brought the dead and the wounded back. And there were some officers that have been killed. I don't know many, but there wasn't many, but I was very sober to see a fella that I'd known, a lad called Mickey Maguire, in one of the companies. It had been killed. He was one of the new reinforcements that came up in Smurs Matrue in September of 1940. Because I got talking to him, like, and he said he would like to be a signaller. I said, I'll go and be resting, I'll get you in the platoon. But we were in full strength then, see. We never got back into the Now got into the signal control.
You said that when you pull back and in effect rested, what are their feelings after you've come out of this stressful situation? How do you feel then?
Well, we didn't feel anything at all. We just more like a routine, and we now then I forget now how long we stopped on that 157, because they said that's the only action we were going to do, because we were going to get relieved. We were going to go out of Tobruk altogether. But we went back into Tobruk, and we went just beyond the centre positions, plonk, where we'd been before, because there was a main road down. So we settled down there and got reorganised and everything. Then all of a sudden, the first early morning, shells kept flying. Oh, we were bombarded, I think. Let's see now. I bet we were bombarding here for an hour. I says, oh, and all the juice, Jerry, Mr. Chandler's. When all come to all, it was the 4th Indian Division. It started to shell Tobruk. They got the wrong orders or something. But as luck happened, I think there was one person wounded. But though they were dropping all over the shop, because we were in slit trenches, which we had to go away, because when we go back into position about where we go, we always dig a slit trench. For about maybe two or three of us. Sometimes maybe just one of us. And
how deep do you dig them? How far down do you go?
About 2 feet. Mm. But it just depends how the ground is. If it's hard enough or it's soft enough, we'll dig deeper. In Mersma True, they're 4 foot deep.
How wide and long?
Just about the width of a coffin, about 18 inches. And if there was just one in, it would maybe about 5 foot. So it could. But when we used to do, we used to get down when the bombing or shelling started, we used to go down on our knees and cover our head up. Mm. We never used to lay flat in the slit trench in case of getting covered in. So you always had that way crouched. So in case the shell blew sand and everything and filled the slit trench in.
Had you got at this time an opportunity to see Tobruk itself? What state was
no,
it in?
No, we never saw Tobruk at all. Well, we pulled back to that position, and then they sent, I think, B Company went back by sea, and I think they got sunk.
Before we go further on, was mail coming into? Did you get any mail whilst you were
can't
in the?
No, I don't think so. No, we didn't, I can't remember getting any mail.
And was it basic?
Tell the truth, we never seemed to bother about mail. We're writing mail. We're writing mail out, like. How it was going out, I don't know. Because the only time that anybody was came to book, I think, was the naval ships.
The food situation, were you getting plenty to eat?
Well, it was good, reasonable, like. It was all tin stuff, McConaughey's, is like.
You weren't getting any kind of naffy supplies?
No, no. Yes, there was naffy supplies. There were cigarettes coming in. And I never bothered, as far as beer went concerned, or chocolate, because there was always chocolate with our rations, bars of chocolate and that. And then we were getting our free issue of cigarettes. What colour they call it? Yeah, they were horrible cigarettes. They weren't up to much length. They weren't like the prominent, such as players or cups and anything like that.
Water, how was the water?
Water was, we were allowed 2 bottles of fresh water a day. The water cart came up. And you fill your water bottles, that's all we had. Say if we hadn't supped or what, because it was getting warm, we'd empty it out and get the fresh from the water cart. It was nearly all the time we used to use it all nearly.
You were there for a number of weeks. How did the morale of yourself and the battalion go? Was it?
Well, I can't tell you about the battalion itself, but the morale of the signal battalion was quite good. Yes, we were all happy. Because we always had something to do, because we were always maintaining, see, telephone lines and the exchange, and as I said, the exchange was getting the sand in. We always had to keep taking units out and giving them a good blowout. and use our shaving brushes to brush the units, and then put these French letters back up on top of them. But still the sand went in. Oh, it's surprising. Now the sand, because it was fine. It was just when it blew up. But there wasn't much of a dust storm in Tobruk. But I think we only had about a couple of just small dust storms, not the great big ones, what we generally used to have in the when we were down at Mers and Matro and them places.
What was the health of the people like?
Well, the health of Massingham was good, yes. And the morale was good. Oh, you never found anybody whimpering out like that. I don't know what's going to happen to me. Oh, I wasn't in here out like that. They seemed to be all enjoying it. Mm. And then we got to word, they were this in December 1941, that was it. Yes, I get the years mixed up. December 41, and then they said, well, right, we're going there. They're going to take us back down to Cassassine. So we all load our equipment on all the signal platoon, what equipment we had, what collected together, we moved into line up and got into these Bedford trucks. So load of the equipment, and she's right, again, and the whole platoon had to get on one. There were 32 of us, including the signal equipment, what we had in baskets and everything, all trampled on, and were 5 days on that truck. And every now and then, for meals, we'd drop off because the battalion was all together, like. And it was over Christmas. Christmas came up, and they said, oh, yeah, we'll get you, when we get back to Mers and Matro, we'll get you Christmas dinner there. So we get back to Mers and Matro, like. And they says, oh, this is no Christmas dinner, eh? So I think we're already there, a day. So we got onto the train, and we ended up at Cassassine camp. Then we...
Did all of the companies go back by road?
By B Company. B Company went by sea and they were sunk. The ship was sunk. We got to have taken prisoners of war. Italian prisoners of war. But I don't think any survived myself. I can't remember. So we all got back to Cassassine, and then we put in tents there. And that's where we rested, and we got some clean underclothes and some clean KD, because we hadn't khaki, had KD and everything like, and any deficiency in the signal platoon we had to make a list of what we required, such as telephones or anything like that. And they says, right, oh, he says, you're going to get some leave. So given us, I think it was 3 days leave in Cairo. Sure. Right, they're going to give us 3 days leave in Cairo. So I went with Jakey Harper and a bloke called Joe Gee. And so we had a trip to, and I can't remember where we stopped. But I know we stopped at where we lodged at the place. And the first thing we thought about is we're going to have a good bath. So there, they had the hay water horn, they had these gas geysers. You had to set the gas geyser going and run the water as it flowed into the bath. So we had a good bath, got all the sand off us and everything like.